Session number 26359.
Colonel Robbins, Reel 8. So that village was taken. How long did this battle last? Was it a...
You mean this first village?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Half a day.
Right.
It was a very mixed up thing. The Germans clearly were not intending to hold it for very long. And that was that. And then, after that, of course, we were entering the preliminary skirmishes, ever inching towards Hill 112. First across the River Odon, a small river, in which there were many fights, and we met the Germans there, and then eventually to Hill 112, which was overlooking the River Orne, which ran between that area of Normandy and the river and the city of Caen. Yes, that was limbering up, as it were, from late June till for 2 or 3 weeks until 8th, 9th, 10th July, when we had the main battle.
Yes. Yeah.
And 18th July, when we finished the battle.
Yes. Yeah.
So that was really the end of Normandy.
So,
that's 6 weeks, I suppose. Mm.
So from then on, were you in charge of the rifle company from...
I remained in command of C Company in the 4th Wiltshires for the rest of my war.
So what was your next engagement after 112?
The next engagement after 112 was something we'd been warned about in England, that our division might well be required to capture the highest point in Normandy. Strangely, this wasn't 112, because 112 was only 112 metres. This point was Mount Pinson, which was 1,200 metres, and it is said on a fine day you could stand on the top of that and see the Seine, and looking the other way you could see the Channel, and you could hold from that viewpoint the whole of Normandy in your gaze. Very important hill. And to our astonishment, we were told, not astonishment, I suppose, we weren't all that surprised, you are going to capture Mount Pinson. Right. On this breakout of Normandy, it wasn't just the 43rd Wessex Division, but I, of course, can only focus on that. On our left were the 15th Scottish Division. On our right, I think, were the 7th Armoured Division. And there was a surge of the whole British army forward towards the high points and the crossing of the River Seine. We formed up, and we had with us the 13th, 18th Hussars. And I can only remember my tiny part in this, in which I happened to be the leading company of my battalion, and my soldiers were sitting on these German tanks, and I was in my jeep, and we had a carrier platoon, which was 3 or 4 carriers of ours. And so we went from the area of 112 down south. And it was a very eerie feeling, because there were no Germans about. Where had they all gone? After a day's drive, when I say a day's drive, we didn't go all that fast, But we got to a place and stayed the night. We were then expected to get on at dawn next day, which we did. We had a light breakfast. And we went on down this road. And suddenly the leading tank stopped. And it was said that Tiger tanks had been spotted about 2,000 yards away on another ridge. The colonel came up and said, you've got to get on. The tank said, those 88 millimeters can write us off from there. They leaguered up beside the road and took up positions ready to fire back. This was absolutely no good to my commanding officer. He said, we have been told to get on. We can't sit here. He turned to me and said, you will go on. So I went on in my jeep. My company were on foot. And we went down, having got to this area, it was now about... Oh, we'd started at dawn, it was now about 6 a.m. And we got on, we weren't fired at, and we came to a stream at the bottom of the approaches up the mountain of Hill 112. My battalion was directed to the right-hand edge of it, to the village of Saint-Jean-le-Blanc. Farms. Little village. And I advanced quite happily without being fired at, got to the stream, which was about 10 feet wide, I suppose. The bridge I expected to find there was blown, so we waded the stream, and I couldn't get any vehicles across. Our pioneers were called up to rebuild the bridge and get on it while we went up the hill into this village. And that's where the battle started. As soon as we got into the orchards and woods up there, machine gun fire came down on us. Well, we got a long way. 2 days without any Germans, and here we were at last facing them. We were on a two-company front by then. I was the left-hand rifle company. The right-hand company was Major Tony Parsons, a great friend, and he and I were advanced parallel to get this area. The fighting on my side was sporadic to begin with. We advanced slowly. Two platoons up. But as we got higher and higher into the first farm, so the firing got pretty fierce, and it then became quite a battle. And I had to make a plan, which was 13 platoon left, 15 platoon right, 14 platoon stay here with me on this track. Now we'll put down some 2-inch mortar stuff. We will advance. But it was all very easy to say that, because the Germans were hidden in those farm buildings. And they could... Because they were looking down on us, they had the advantage. And this battle dragged on and on. Slowly my people were being wounded here and there. I suppose we were doing damage to the Germans. At one point I went over to the right-hand platoon. Because the platoon commander had been killed, and I found that the sergeant had been wounded and a lance corporal was in charge, I tried to cheer him up. He was a very, very nice man, this Lance Corporal. A Welshman, I remember. Sergeant Jenkins, Corporal Jenkins. And he had this Welsh way of quite enjoying killing. And I said, well, hold your position here. I'll try and reinforce you with something. He was down to about 10 men. And I remember he suddenly got hold of these men and charged at a building. And as he charged this building, he came face to face with a German NCO charging the other way. There was a fight, to my astonishment, in front of my eyes.
That was hand to hand.
Yeah, hand to hand. And so Corporal Jenkins, Group 1, and they settled down there. Another platoon commander made an effort to get into another farm building, and he was shot and fell slumped into the doorway of this building. I tried to send someone to get him, but they were shot. This man was in terrible agony. I could see it. I hate having to say it, but I seem to remember him actually putting his... Can you switch off?
Yes,
sir. That he put his Sten gun to his stomach and shot himself. He was in such pain.
There was nothing much you could have done for him, could you? I mean, you couldn't rescue him.
We tried, that's the trouble, you see. And as we tried to get to this doorway, so a machine gun in a loft up there would cover him, you see. That was the trouble. I fired an anti-tank weapon into this loft. A Piat went off. And still the battle went on. It was now 6 p.m. 12 hours. And that bridge had been built, and those tanks of ours, which should have come up, now made an effort to come, and one or two of them then came up. Being summer, it was still daylight. And I said, well, good, you know, nice to see you at last. They really finished the battle off for us by whanging their artillery, their heavy guns, into what remained of the Germans in these buildings. One or two came out and surrendered. But I can't remember ever taking any prisoners. I think it was a bad battle, that. And it was over.
What was your relationship like with the tanks? I mean, you were infantry and, you know, they were tanks. They had different perspective on...
They had a different perspective, and I personally would not like to have been in a tank, because I saw so many of them brewed up with men fried alive inside. They, on the other hand, used to tell me we would hate to be in your position out in the open and having to dig a hole to protect yourself from being fired. Our relationship varied very, very much with whichever regiment it was. Some regiments were not, in my opinion, very good. I will not name them because I really don't want to.
No, fair enough. In what way would they not be good? Was that the accuracy
they wouldn't,
of their fire? Or?
Well, for instance, their job was to support us. And frequently they did not support us as well as they could have done, i.e. by coming up or so on. Also, the British tanks always had a habit, as night fell, of withdrawing out of the battle so that they could go back, they said, to a lager and replenish petrol, ammunition, food. And also, we knew, to have a chance of a better sleep than we were having up front. The Germans had no worry at all about fighting at night, and frequently their tanks attacked us during the night. Ours were nowhere to be seen at night, is my opinion. I mean, I can remember on one occasion of quite a famous regiment, and I had a troop of them, and I really needed his help. And he said, "No, I can't move from here because it's dark and I might fall into a ditch." I said, "Well, don't." And I got one of my carriers to do what this job was, which was, in fact, to hold a level crossing. That is what I mean. And I don't want to mention regiments.
But certainly the relationship varied depending on the regiment.
Exactly. Yeah, the relationship varied. The Guards Armoured Division were in support of us once or twice, and I always found them pretty good. Pretty good.
So
there we were. Night falling, the tanks withdrew because it was getting dark. We held our position, and then the order came up. The divisional commander has decided that there is no use our attacking from this flank because the objective is not these two villages of Saint-Jean-le-Blanc, but the objective is farther left, Mount Mansant itself. Well, these villages were on the right-hand slopes of it, and we thought we were going to attack up through there and up, but no. Then came the order that we were to withdraw that night. The withdrawal operation is, I suppose, the most difficult one in war. Very, very difficult withdrawing in the face of the enemy. And I was now to experience my first experience of this. I had a marvellous young gunner officer with me, and I remember as night was falling, we walked forward together, forward of our positions, which we now held, to see if we could get a good observation point for anything that might happen. After 100 yards or so, we rounded a hedge and to our amazement came face to face with two SS soldiers. They were as surprised as we were, I think. I, as the infantryman, should have reacted quickly and shot them both. But I didn't have my weapon handy in my holster or hung round my neck. This young gunner officer, who loved fooling about with German weapons, had a Schmeisser, German submachine gun, in his hand. He shot the first German dead and wounded the second, who scarpered wounded down the hill. We looked down the hill and saw a lot of Germans, a couple of hundred, and some tanks, as it were forming up for what we expected, this counterattack. Being a good young officer, he had his radio with him. He radioed back to his troops in my company and gave the code word for gunfire. And within a few minutes, he'd put some rounds onto this group of Germans, which he'd seen. Very quick, very good, but that is what he was trained to do. So it halted any immediate attack. That night, we started withdrawing. Now, I seem to remember saying we hadn't eaten since dawn that day. So no food all day except water and a dry biscuit. The quartermaster couldn't get up with any stew. There was no point. And what happens is that there are various points we lay down. And the troops have to go past this point and say who they are. And one platoon went through, and at this point was my gunner officer in his carrier. And as each of my soldiers went through, he handed them a bit of bully beef on a biscuit, which he'd got from his own reserve rations. And he did that for all my soldiers as they went through, and some had a quick mug of water. That was the relationship we had with our gunners. Absolutely marvellous. So, in the withdrawal, the forward troops, the soldiers go out first, and the platoon commander of that lot is last. Then the next one, officer last. The company commander, having got all his troops out, leaves last. And I left last. And the Germans were already, by now, to about midnight, creeping in. So, I went past and thanked this boy, and we retraced our steps down to the stream, out and over, to battalion headquarters. We said, we've now got fresh orders to attack the hill from another way. At this point, the mortar platoon captain came up to me and said, may I now have my two mortar sergeants who were with you up there? I said to Sergeant Major, get hold of those two sergeants and give them. He came to me, his face pretty grim. I'm very sorry, sir, they're not with us. I think we've left them up there. I said, but you know their trench. Either they were asleep. I told them we were going. They must have gone to sleep again. This captain he walked away. He got on his motorcycle. He'd been to see me several times that day. He went back those 2 miles, parked his machine at the bottom of the hill, crept up to where he knew I'd been. To his amazement, found these two men still asleep in this trench. Shook them gently. Germans around. Crept away down this hill. 3 of them got on this motorcycle, and he got them back. I put him in for a military cross. He never got it.
And his name was?
Tom Powell. Captain Tom Powell. Who's he's alive now, he's about 90 years old now.
Yeah.
A very, very brave man. He was an auctioneer in Chippenham.
Yeah.
Lovely man. Courageous. And I formed up, no sleep, no food. It was then about 2 in the morning. We were told to immediately get going. We were going to the bottom of the hill a bit more, where we were to assemble for another forming up position. And, said the CO, the cooks will have breakfast there at 4 a.m. We got there at about 4 a.m. and we could smell bacon. And there's hot tea. And dawn was breaking. And suddenly, from the ridge just above us at the village of Danvu, all hell broke loose. And we were bombarded by German guns. The cooks were shot. The Dixies were blown up. The breakfast was flown into the air. Several, there were two or three companies all around there by then, and the brigade major had chosen a very bad spot, and he ought to be shot for having done it. Whether he didn't know the Germans were there, or whether... these things happen in war. He had put us into a position which was under observation by Germans. Some people said that in that village there were some nuns walking about who were Germans dressed up as others. And they gave the message back to the German guns to let these British troops who were forming up have it. We ran from that place down into some ditches and escaped what was left of us. A lot of people were wounded then. So that was another day without food. But because we trained so well in England, we could withstand this. We could go without food for two or three days and still keep going. Not very pleasant, after much ardour. But there you are.
were you all very cross or humiliated having to sort of run from your positions like that?
Angry.
Yes.
Angry. I mean, it was take cover while you can or you'll be blown up. And the commanding officer, who was a very fine man, Colonel Luce, gripped the situation, and his battalion was led round to the other end of the bottom of hill of Mount Pinson. We passed through the 5th Battalion of the Wiltshire Regiment, who were in the centre, who had been ordered to advance and capture a crossroads, which was vital to the attack for some reason or other. They were doing that. That battalion had a very, very severe fight on their hands. And they attacked up the hill. They were held up at a little bridge across a stream. The commanding officer had told one of his rifle companies, which was commanded by a very great friend of mine, to go through at night and try and get round this bridge. He did what he could. He was surrounded by Germans, and most of his company was shot. He was then given orders to withdraw, and he did, and withdrew, but he too was shot dead. One rifle company. Next day, the commanding officer went down to where the rest of the battalion were held up to see what was happening. He got out of his vehicle, carrier, and it was Minden Day, and he stuck a red rose in his helmet, and he was twirling his ash plant walking stick, and he happened to say to the adjutant, "I am very frightened, but I must go forward." He went forward to the bridge, and there on either side, lying in mud, were his men who couldn't get on. He said, he encouraged them, he said, "You've got to get on, we're coming up through you." A German sniper, 40 yards away, in a tree, shot him straight through the head, dead. The man with the colonel saw this man, the flash of his gun, and he fired in the tree, shot him dead. But this action made the men surge forward, and they got up and got through, and the battle went on again.
Stop you just there. Colonel Robbins, end of reel 8.